Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Friends, podcasters, countrymen and women, welcome to this week's Easter special edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Like the first cuckoo of spring, a harbinger of the freshest newborn chat from the world of tech. This is your weekly homily, bringing you deep truths from the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK and Computerworld UK. Every week we huddle up in our audio Smarties pouch, gathering inside a disappointing chocolate shell, chatting the hell out of it in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech talk on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. So do like us, follow us and download our wares. You can hear us thanks to our sponsor, Audio Technica, the rock upon which we build this church of chat. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am thrilled to be joined in conversation by sizzling Scott Carey, online editor of techworld.com.
Hello.
Hot Henry Burrell, staff writer of PC Advisor and Macworld UK.
Hello.
And Diddy David Price, acting editor of Macworld UK.
All right.
This week, we will be up to our knees in Apple chat, drowning in bits of the BBC and deep in the mire with BlackBerry. It is going to be mega, and I never use that word lightly. So limber up those lug holes, listener, and away we go. David. Agadoo-doo-doo, what has Apple done this week?
Do I have to do my bit all in song now?
No, you can just talk.
Good. Awesome. All right. Excellent. Apple has... You know what? I miss the days when Apple had the capacity to surprise me, because it no longer has. That's what I'm sad to tell you.
It's such a note of sadness.
I know. It's Easter, isn't it? It's a time of sadness and rebirth. you remember last week, me and Lewis talked about Apple. Basically, if you play back last week's podcast, you would effectively have what happened.
Okay.
Because we called it. We got pretty much everything right.
So let's presume that not everybody heard that.
All right.
We got a small phone.
Yeah, so we got a new, more powerful 4-inch iPhone SE. We've got a new, more powerful 9.7-inch iPad. We got the name wrong on that one. It's called the iPad Pro rather than the iPad Air. We've got iOS 9.3. We've got new Apple Watch bands. And
nylon.
Oh, well, we didn't know that. That's true. That came as a surprise. Yeah, okay, yeah. And we also said that there'd be mention of the new Apple headquarters, and they even said that. So it was weird. It's like we'd got the script in advance, and we got access to it, and we just knew everything.
But that's almost intentional, isn't it? I mean, there's a whole history now of several years of whether you call them leaks or, you know, speculation that all adds to this kind of marketing push for Apple. I mean, it makes news.
Yeah. They seem to have had a change of approach. There was a time when they would keep everything absolutely locked down. And I genuinely think that if anything did emerge, it was against their wishes. And that works in its own way. That creates the hype. And I think what we're seeing now is a sort of hangover of that, where people think, wow, you know, we've heard something about the iPhone SE. This is the hugest scandal in the world. Well, actually, yeah, you're right. I think they are quite happy for everybody to know everything in advance. And it does seem to generate its own news cycle. I don't know how long they can sustain that, because it felt disappointing.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's anything to do with the press around it so much as the fact that they actually haven't released anything distinctly new for such a long time. So people can predict, I think, with a little bit more certainty, whether they're going to size up or size down existing products, whereas we used to be shocked by a new product, the iPhone, the iPad, etc.
Yeah, it's true.
To be fair, they kept the mad recycling robot under lock and key.
That's true. Well, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because we were all covering this live, and we were all hugely frustrated because at the start of the event, they were spending ages on the recycling with Liam, the robot that could apparently disassemble an iPhone.
One at a time, obviously.
One at a time. And there was
environment chat and then FBI chat as well.
And then health chat. It was all very
political. All the care kit stuff. And it was ages before they actually got onto the product. And in retrospect, it feels a little bit like they didn't have very much to say. And they were trying to sort of kill time.
Mm.
Which,
well, they've always built to the crescendo. I mean, they invented this whole launch, which everyone does now. We forget that.
Yeah.
But you know, this is this whole idea of the hour long event, which ends hopefully on a high, is an Apple invention.
I like how the only thing we were surprised by was a different band for the Apple Watch, and somewhere Steve Wozniak is weeping.
Steve Wozniak's always unhappy,
but he's weeping at that.
Would that we live so long to see a time when nylon was considered, like, I mean, this is, you know, it was the material of the future in the '60s.
All your clothes are fashionable again now.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. I'm giving off sparks all over the place.
Yeah.
So this small iPhone SE, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want one.
Okay.
For starters.
I want
because
one.
I loved the square-edged iPhones, and it's gone back to that.
Yeah.
And also, I like the smaller iPhones. I've got no interest in the phablet sort of bit large screen. I prefer it just to be in my pocket and to be, like, a small... And me and David share small hands, so, you know.
Tiny hands. Henry, we've not actually seen your hands so far.
Tiny hands.
Yes, we've all got small hands.
Got Trump hands. Yeah, like well, I think the SE... I know. I think the SE is a very good product, a very sensible product, a very appealing product, but it's not a very exciting product.
Yeah.
So we have to sort of compartmentalise the way we feel about it as journalists who want scandal and we want excitement and hype. But as a person on the street, you're thinking, I've got an iPhone 5S, I like the 4-inch screen, and I want something more powerful, and it fulfuls everything we were asking of it.
It's better than like when they did the 5C, which was essentially the previous year's product packaged up.
Yeah,
you know, this actually feels like, you know, I'm an Android guy, but it does feel like I could recommend to an iPhone consumer this is a good product to buy.
Yeah,
which is, and perhaps what the slight ennui we're feeling is to do with the fact that, you know, we are at what our engineer Chris Martin refers to as peak smartphone, that there isn't actually that much more to...
Yeah, they were trying to like sex up a business decision, weren't they? Because the new one's got the same processing power as the 6S, which is the current model as well. So by putting the same phone on the market at two different price points, they're going to sort of, you know, recapture what's become a slightly stagnated market, maybe.
Well, it's not quite the 6S. This is the interesting thing, is that they've managed to sell it. The headline they want people to take away is it's a 6S in a 5S body. But it hasn't got 3D Touch. I'm looking down at my notes now. And it hasn't, what I'm really upset about, it hasn't got second generation Touch ID. Because I used to have a 5S, and I've sort of... You very quickly forget how frustrating it is, because it's really slow. And a lot of the time it doesn't work. The second gen Touch ID on the 6S and the 6S Plus, and I think on the 6 as well, is really, really good. Really fast, instant. In fact, you find that you can't actually go to the lock screen. You just touch the home screen and it's opened. So they haven't got that either, and it hasn't got the barometer.
Barometer? What the hell is... What?
Oh, no. Worst decision ever.
The barometer. It's like the compass. I've just never got these things. I mean, all the
other applications use it. You wouldn't specifically open... In fact, I don't think you can open the barometer, but it informs all the other...
I want really poor information about what the weather might do over the next couple of days.
They would say things like, it looks changeable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the front-facing camera is 1.2 megapixels instead of 5 megapixels. So there are some shortfalls. It's interesting, and I still think it's great. Don't get me wrong, but it's a compromised version of the 6S.
I do kind of find it strange that it is basically a throwback to a phone I had and loved with, you know, a lot of these new features, but then at the same price point pretty much as my existing phone.
Yeah.
So although I still want one, I can see why some people might be frustrated by that.
Yeah, the physical design is identical to the 5S, which is, what, 3 years old, 2.5 years old.
I quite like that, though, because in the past, Apple, as with other manufacturers, but more successfully perhaps, has always changed something so that the early adopters can flash their phones on the train. And, you know, that they bring in a white colour and everyone get excited about it. And the reality was that was just so that people could say, hey, look, I'm an early adopter. There's something sensible to me about a device that's iteratively upgraded but doesn't look different.
Yeah. Well, talking about early adopters leads on quite nicely to the iPad Pro, where I think the early adopters got royally burned.
Yeah.
Is everybody with me on that? I mean,
absolutely. Well, they got royally burned anyway because it was a device that was called a Pro that was essentially a little bit faster than the previous iPad. It was very and a bigger display.
Well, that was the weird thing because we got the impression that Pro meant big, and now we realise it doesn't. It means fast.
It means Surface worries us, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. But the, you know, the 12.9-inch iPad Pro came out, 6 months ago. And, yeah, the early adopters, the loyalists, trooped in and bought it. And then 6 months later, they've got the iPad Pro 9.7-inch, which has a better screen. It's got this thing, True Tone display, which, I mean, I've not tried it yet, but it says it adapts the colours to the light that's around you. So it's sort of in different lights, it displays slightly differently. So it's more true to the colours that you're supposed to be displaying, and it's available in a slightly wider range of storage options. So you get the 256 gigabyte option, which you do also now get for the 12.9-inch, but you didn't at the time. So there will be some people who bought the 128, 12.9-inch, all these numbers, iPad Pro. and they'll be
sitting like next to Rain Man.
Definitely 128. But they didn't have the opportunity. And then you're thinking, well, what do I get out of being loyal to the company? And Apple trades on it. They got rinsed. Yeah. They got absolutely rinsed.
Where do we think the iPad is now? I mean, I don't mean your personal iPad. I'm sure you know what it is. But the iPad as a product.
It's in a bit of purgatory, isn't it? Because now they've got this size iPad, which, as we rightly point out, has better capabilities than its bigger brother, and bigger was supposedly better. You've now got the iPad Air 2 sitting in the same lineup, which are the same size. But I mean, if you want to get the technically better product, it's not too much more now, is it, than the iPad Air 2?
No.
The new Pro.
I would still recommend the iPad Air 2 to a lot of people.
Yes.
Because I think the iPads, I mean, this is what we've been talking about. How much better can they get? They've advanced to the point where they're more powerful than they need to be because the vast majority of apps on the App Store obviously will want people to be able to play them. So they don't generally go, well, here's something that only the iPad Pro can run.
Yeah.
So I don't think most people need the iPad Pro's power. It will last for longer. That's the main thing. It will take longer before it gets slow. You might be able to get away with that by not updating iOS.
But functionally, Is there stuff you can do with it that you can't do with the other iPads?
Well, it's got the Apple Pencil compatibility, so it's materially better for designers.
So wait, so we do need a pencil now?
Not an 80-pound pencil.
Well, I think Apple has been slightly unfairly maligned on that one because they were talking about. When Steve Jobs said you don't need a stylus, and if they have a stylus, you know they've blown the interface. He was slightly differently talking about. I think he was talking about smaller screens, and
I think wasn't he specifically talking about Windows tablets that at the time.
Well, wasn't he talking about an iPhone? He wasn't even talking about a tablet.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I think he might be. Yeah, sort of like Blackberries and stuff that had styluses, and it's because they couldn't make the interface work.
All right, I can't get you on that one. What about when Apple trolled all poor people?
I think I know what you mean now. So this is when Apple referred, was it Phil Schiller, wasn't it? He said that a lot of people have five-year-old PCs and that this is sad. And this has caused a lot of consternation in the IDG offices because clearly it's a good thing if people have five-year-old PCs and they're still working because that's a sign that they're good machines and they don't need to be replaced every year, which is something.
It's one of the big problems for Microsoft with Windows is that one of the reasons people can't be persuaded to upgrade is because they don't need to. It's actually a success story that's kind of biting them on the backside.
Like you talk about with Lego.
Exactly.
It lasts too well.
Yeah, which is why. So Lego, Thank you, David. Yeah. Lego makes all it...
Lego Segway.
Well, no, but it makes all its
a
money...
Legway.
A Legway. Yeah, good, very, very good. He's on fire today. Lego makes all its money from licensing deals with Star Wars and people like that because the core product is so good, it lasts for two or three generations, so you don't need to go, but you could get, you know, my grandmother's house, we had Lego when I was a kid, I can give that to my daughter. Not yet, because she'll eat it when she's ready, and it will be fine. Do you know Lego is also the world's largest manufacturer of tyres?
I did know that because I told you always say that.
Yeah, yeah, so no, so you're absolutely right that the Lego effect is true of with us. So Apple said it was sad that people had 5-year-old PCs because presumably the unsad thing to do is to buy a new product every year.
It's terrible. And they had the gall to do this, you know, what, 15 minutes after lecturing us about the environment. And they're saying, well, actually what you should be doing is buying you know, iPads made with loads of tin from Indonesia every year, and that's great for the environment, of course. You know, it's sort of sickening that they would do that.
And what also jars is that it's an event in which they didn't even mention their own laptop products, one of which has not had a redesign for 6 years, because isn't the Mac Air still the same design, if not the same innards, as the original version?
It's overdue for a redesign. Well, this is one other thing that we wouldn't get a point for this for last week's podcast because we sat right on the fence and we said maybe there'll be maybe new backs or maybe not. But nothing on that front. We still think there'll be some soon.
So does this actually suggests or potentially adds more evidence to the idea that there will be a slightly more radical redesign of the MacBook?
Yeah, I think there will.
Slightly later.
Yeah, like Henry says, physically, it's been the same for a long, long time.
He also used the word innards, which I really like.
Yeah.
Can we start using gizzards, potentially, as well?
I like internals.
Entrails.
Yeah, there's lots of good ones.
Good. All right, well, I think we've...
iOS 9.3.
Oh, yeah.
So I downloaded it straight away, because I do that.
Yep.
And the only feature that I've noticed in any way is Night Shift.
Night Shift is great.
Night Shift is so good.
Oh, I love
Night Shift.
And it does sound like the next Marvel film.
Yes. So, Night Shift makes the colours warmer, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you set it, and do you have it set to sunrise and sunset, or do you
I put it have on it manually? Set from, like, 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. So anytime I read something late or early, it's a little bit warmer.
Basically when I'm asleep.
Sunrise.
Different lifestyles.
This is a very musical podcast.
I just realised that was not an endorsement of Rolf Harris in any way.
Good.
Good to know.
We can edit that bit out.
Where the hell did Night Shift come from is what I want to
know.
Because it's just this small, weird little feature that just that they were giving quite large, which again might be a sort of sad indictment of them not having much to say, that Night Shift got a lot of press.
I think it is quite important. Remember, this is only a 0.3 update to iOS. So generally, there wouldn't be anything significant. It would be just bugs and stuff like that. And this is, you know, this is significant, and it fits in with the sort of health sort of stuff they've been talking about a lot lately, because it's supposed to be
Also, Apple at its best is it's very subtle things that enhance user experience.
Yeah,
which is, I guess, what we're talking about there, isn't it? I think it is interesting that there are feature updates in a point upgrade because of the way that Apple's software now goes into beta. So you know that if it makes it into the final code, the feedback's been positive. So people like using it.
So, which we do.
We do. Have you tried locking a note yet?
No, I don't. I've sort of looked into it and then realised that I had to go into my settings.
Sounds like terrible backstreet sexual.
No, you just, I did one this morning.
Tried locking a note.
That doesn't sound like anything. Any kind of
drug speak.
Come on, mate.
Tried locking a note.
Doing it in that voice doesn't turn it into drug talk.
If you turn anything into that voice, it sounds like drug talk.
My mate recorded a podcast.
That one doesn't. I've lived a life.
No, you don't have to go to settings. You just...
I just couldn't work it out then.
No, I did one this morning. I think you just go into the note and then tap the share icon.
Oh, okay.
And it will offer you the opportunity to lock it.
Is that share, S-H-A-R-E, or the singer share?
You're not going to sing Do I Believe in Life After Love now, are you?
And then if I click and lock it,
yes.
Does it have two options? Lock it and lock it to make sure the FBI can't have it.
Yeah, they can't get your shopping list.
Double lock.
That was nice.
Yeah, my shopping list is what I use my notes for.
Remember milk.
Not intuitive enough, Scotland.
Good. So we have thoroughly digested Apple's Easter uprising. And so the question I would like to ask everybody is, if you've got your Apple in front of you, is the stalk pointing up or is the stalk pointing downwards? David Price.
Oh, but this is so... You can't reduce it to one word.
Yes, I can. Stalk up, stalk down.
Just did.
Can it point both upwards and downwards?
Why not?
Because, like I said, the products are good. They're just not exciting to me as a journalist. But I think for the buyers, great
stalk
stuff.
Stalk up and down.
Both. It's a mutant.
Okay. Scott Carey.
Up. No, I want an SE, and the fact that they've made me desire a product that I already have is probably a good thing for them. So, well done.
Henry Burrell.
I'll pick the stalk off.
Wow.
I'm going to keep my current Apple.
Okay, interesting. Well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
On that bombshell, we'll take a short break and we'll be back in just 2 seconds. Henry, welcome to the pod. You bring us news of yet another nail in BlackBerry's coffin. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, this one stood out for me. I mean, it's debatably, given the week we just had with Apple, a smaller story, but I still think it brings up larger issues about how tech has gone over the past decade. So Facebook has, probably tried to do it quietly, but dropped support for BlackBerry's latest operating system, which means if you're a BlackBerry user and you want to use Facebook, you now have to go through the web browser to access it.
Yeah.
I believe that's correct. And also the Facebook-owned WhatsApp recently did this as well. So there's quite a lot of pickup on the story. But I mean, at the same time, it's also dropping support for older Android. I mean, I don't think anybody uses Android 2.1 and 2.2 anymore, but they will no longer support that. Mm. And it no longer supports Windows 7.1 use of Facebook as well. But I mean, I kind of wanted to open it up to you guys. I know Matt's the resident BlackBerry fan. So do we think this is something that's going to make a big deal, or were BlackBerry at the stage where they've released the Priv, which uses Android? Yeah. Should they have done that a long time ago, and would it have helped?
Interesting questions. I mean, I think it's worth pointing out that in the case of Facebook, it's only relatively recently that there was a Facebook app for BlackBerry for a long time. Even I think in BlackBerry 10, there was an inverted commas app. I'm doing the inverted commas sign just in case the readers can't see that. But it was actually just a link to the web page,
right.
Essentially. The same for YouTube and various other things. So in that sense, it isn't a huge story, although the fact that it's moving backwards tells its own story. And then I suppose with WhatsApp, again, the only thing I'd slightly counter that with is BlackBerry's own Messenger app is hugely prevalent on BlackBerry. Mm. Although, of course, if you're on BBM, you want to be able to messenger people who aren't on BlackBerry. I think the interesting thing for BlackBerry is what happens now, because the funny thing about BlackBerry is that the products are good. The phones are good. And, you know, in terms of brand recognition, after Apple, and arguably even before Samsung, BlackBerry still has that name, if not cachet. But clearly, as a, in my view, as a OEM, as a manufacturer of handsets, it's over. Mm. That game's over. And the Priv is a brilliant phone. The Priv is the phone that my wife uses, and she loves it. It's the best phone she's ever had, in her words. But it costs £700. No one's going to buy a BlackBerry for £700. The BlackBerries themselves, the most recent ones that they've had that have come out on BlackBerry, again, great. They do exactly what a BlackBerry is supposed to do, but they can't compete in terms of multimedia or some of the more creative aspects of either Android or iPhone, and they can't compete on price. So as a OEM, I think BlackBerry is game over, and this is just kind of another, albeit relatively significant, nail in that particular coffin. What's interesting about BlackBerry is the underlying technology, which is what makes the products great, is great. And if you want secure email messaging, certainly from a business perspective, from an enterprise perspective, BlackBerry's underlying technology, you know, is the best still. And I don't understand why a Google or a Microsoft hasn't bought BlackBerry yet.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Because, like, from an enterprise perspective, if they can supply, you know, maybe not like how they used to, but 10 years ago, but if they're supplying fleets of these things to businesses, perhaps it'll be that the business doesn't want you to have Facebook on your phone anyway.
Yeah.
So, from that perspective, they might not lose out.
I think the problem, because I think 2 or 3 years ago, people like me, who clearly know nothing, were confidently predicting that someone like Microsoft would buy BlackBerry for exactly that reason. But
Windows Phone.
Well, yeah, so they've got Windows Phone, but BlackBerry could easily be part of Windows Phone. You could use the technology, but Windows Phone has got good enough at that stuff that if you wanted to run a fleet of handsets, you might as well go for Windows Phone. And it's better at the Android, iOS stuff as well. But also, we as users don't want to be dictated to by the company as to what phone we've got. So trivial to get our email onto our devices anyway, or whatever we're using, Slack, Messenger app. And it's impossible for even the sort of largest enterprise to really control access, or at least that you physically bring your device into work. So that kind of model of we're going to buy 100,000 BlackBerries and give them out to all our employees, it's kind of over, I think. Mm. Any strong feelings about BlackBerry from the rest of the room?
Sadness.
Sadness.
And I can't really put my finger on why, because I've never owned, possibly never used a BlackBerry.
That is a strange emotion to feel.
No, well,
maybe there's just an overwhelming sense of sadness in the room.
I think there might be an element of that. But I remember there was that, have you all seen the song that the BlackBerry guys recorded for, I think it was for some sort of company away day or something. So it was only ever supposed to be seen internally. But it was really good, actually. And they'd done a version of REO Speedwagon's, what's the song called, Keep On Loving You? Or I'm Going To Keep On Loving You.
I'm gonna keep on loving you.
And it was actually even better than that. That's how good it was.
Even better than that?
It was even better than that. And they got guitarists and everything. And it was
got guitarists and everything.
And the people that were singing, I think they were all like vice presidents or whatever of the company. So it was like, oh, look, the boss is up there singing a song.
Yeah.
But they changed the words. So it was all about app developers. So that we're going to keep on loving you. And the new SDK is really cool. And like really embarrassing stuff like that. And I watched that and it made me feel so sad because it was really obviously, it was their developers moment. It was the moment when they realised slightly too late that this is a game that is not won by having the best technology and the best handsets. It's won by just getting all the app developers on board.
Yeah, I mean, they were the ultimate biggest victims of Apple's iPhone not being a faster horse, if you know what I mean, of the complete reimagining of the smartphone. Because, you know, we forget. You watch any episode of The West Wing, right? The coolest thing about all of them is that they've all got BlackBerries. And that was, you know, it was locked down. If you were someone who was connected and had your finger on the pulse, you had a BlackBerry. And iPhone just killed it because, yeah, exactly what you're saying. The software support wasn't there for BlackBerry. They couldn't react quickly enough because it just came out of the blue and destroyed them. And that is the root of your sadness.
That bit was a really nice preview for Henry, who hasn't attended an IDG karaoke night yet.
Yes.
And this is basically what you get. Yeah. These two singing songs that I've never heard of.
And we have a lengthy chat beforehand where we talk about BlackBerry. And,
Okay. So let's quickly skirt around the room then. BlackBerry, doomed or set to boom? David Price.
Doomed.
Scott Carey.
Yeah, it's just another nail in the coffin.
Henry, can you think of anything different to say?
No.
Anything that rhymes with doomed, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Doomed, set to boom.
Loomed? Internet of Looms.
Loom. We're going back to the looms.
Returning to its mother's womb.
Sean Coombs.
Elephant in the room.
I think we've probably covered Blackberry.
tomb would have been tomb. Relevant.
Blackberry, doom, set to boom, in the tomb. I think we're all saying in the tomb.
Yeah.
In the tomb. Good. Okay. If you're still with us, well done. we'll take a couple of seconds and we'll be back shortly. Scott Carey. I believe that children are our future. And so, it seems, does the BBC. The BBC has been giving stuff away this week. Hey, what's going on with my licence fee?
That was my first ever musical intro. It was quite a special moment, actually.
Get used to it.
I'm enjoying it. Yes, so the BBC are rolling out a new product for to help children get into coding, which this isn't the first time, because Raspberry Pi have been sort of trying to help children code for a little while now. But this is an even simpler, basically microcomputer that will just allow for inputting of code and a few sort of bits and bobs to help them see how that works, basically. Whereas Raspberry Pi has a visual interface, it runs on Linux, it's actually got an operating system.
Right.
And this is really stripping it back and trying to make coding cool.
And this is going out to every school?
Yeah, so it's every child between, I think, years 11 and 13. But I never went to a school with years, so it might be ages 11 to 13.
I think it's years 6 and 7.
There you go.
So ages 11 and 12.
Well, what does that even mean?
Yeah, see, I don't know what that means.
I went to school, it was years 3 to 5 and then 6th form.
Yeah, same. Yeah,
first form in my school. First form, second form. Third, and then it sort of melded into third year, fourth year, fifth year.
So sixth form. Transpires that we maybe didn't learn anything at school.
About numbers?
Good, okay.
Well, this is the thing about this. I mean, I didn't realise I was supposed to know how to code. And is this because there's a shortage of people now? We've kind of had the first couple of generations of people who have built these amazing things for us, and we all use them, and we haven't bothered to learn how it works.
Well, I worry about that slightly. So, for instance, if I am occasionally tangentially involved in recruiting developers here at International Data Group, and developers right now are right at the peak of the job market because it is, as you say, a rare skill. But we've seen this happen before. What is happening slowly but surely is that APIs come in and graphical user interfaces come in, and the ability to do pure coding becomes less important, still absolutely important, but less important in the same way as, you know, you no longer need someone who can typeset in order to create a printed page, for instance. That will take a long time, but that is the way it goes. But I think what's interesting about something like the BBC Microbit, Raspberry Pi, even Minecraft, actually, which all kids use, is it gets them in that mindset of writing a series of statements and questions and then seeing how that renders somewhere else.
Yeah, and I was over at Google Campus earlier in the week, and I was talking to Sarah Drinkwater, who's the head over there, and they've started a new program this week trying to get young people into entrepreneurship and to teach young people what on earth entrepreneurship is, because they did a survey and about 75% of kids, young adults, said that they have no interest in sort of starting their own business. They would rather have the security of working for an established business, which I thought was quite sad. And when I spoke to her, she said, we don't want everyone out of here going out thinking that they're going to be the new Mark Zuckerberg or even just setting up their own business. But that all of the ideas and the skills that it teaches in terms of problem solving and sort of that innovative mindset, get up and go attitude will help. And I feel the same way about this BBC micro bit.
Yeah.
It's not actually teaching code that matters, but it's giving that sort of technological element to their education, which, as me and Henry just said, no, like, we had computer science when we were at school was embarrassing. It was like, here's a computer, have a little play. It was nothing to do with how it works on the back end. It was nothing to do with the technology or the science or the engineering behind it. And I think that sort of STEM element to the education process is really important, because digital will be a growing part of everyone's lives.
I think there's a sort of lost generation in the middle. I hesitate to say I'm the same generation as you, Scott, because you're very young. But you've got computer science, back in the sort of 70s and 80s, and it was taught as a sort of messy, open-ended, sort of like an academic subject where you're learning about this stuff in a very general way. And then you get to the 90s, I think, and it becomes vocational, and it becomes, here's how to use Office software.
And that's problematic, isn't it?
It is, and I think what they're trying to do is, what I really like about the Micro bit is it's the opposite of an iPhone. It's open, and it's cheap, and you don't have to worry about
It's like giving, you've got young children, same as me, David, it's like giving your child a piece of paper and a crayon.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than saying, colour in this picture. Mm. And I think your point's absolutely right. So computer education, we're broadly the same age. There was no computer education at my school. I didn't use a computer until I was at university, and that was my roommate's computer. Yeah. And post-university, I didn't own a computer until I was in my mid-20s, at the time when I was the editor of PC Advisor, somewhat worryingly. But I suppose what we see, Scott, on the enterprise side of our publishing business is we see lots of CIOs or heads of IT who have worked a long time to get to the top of a business and understand specifically how to do tech, but the tech moves on. Mm. And they're the worst people, actually, to then make the decision. It takes really, if you meet a CIO who's transforming a business, they're extraordinary people because they're at the top of a big company and they're also transforming the way that company works, rather than doing the thing that's got them to the top in the first place.
Yeah, and if you listen to them speak enough, they use all the same metaphors. It's, you know, jump off a cliff and build the plane while you're falling.
Yeah.
It's all the old sort of cliches, but they do, because there's so much
to do,
and they have to just get on and do it.
And we all know CIOs who aren't doing that, and their businesses are really troubled. And the reality is that the pace of change gets quicker and quicker and quicker. So I also agree. I think this is a brilliant thing, because I think, and I also think it's brilliant that kids play with Minecraft and stuff like that, because what they're not learning, and if you look at children, they're not bothered about the proprietary software or interface or whatever. They're not learning a thing. They're learning concepts. And we do need the world, not just this country, but we do need a workforce that are of people who try and work out how to do stuff rather than learning how to use things. Mm. So I think it's a really cool move by the BBC.
Have you seen the Mirror's take on this?
Oh, yes.
Generation of hackers.
It's awful, isn't it?
What?
This is the
Daily Mirror.
The Daily Mirror.
A national newspaper in
the
United Kingdom.
The newspaper my granddad used to read. They're saying that what this is going to result in is more hackers being, you know, on the license payer's dime.
Unbelievable.
But, you know, which is such a logical fail that it's almost hard to dismantle it.
It's the fact that it actually comes from the tech desk of that paper as well, and the comprehensive misunderstanding.
Well, it's a willful misunderstanding.
Yes, they've
been told to find the controversy where there is none. But the idea that we should not teach skills because we're scared that they'll be misused. It's like, you know, would you not teach chemistry in case they make bombs?
It's farcical.
Yeah, the fact that Nick Leeson committed fraud was not because he knew about manipulating numbers, it's because he had no moral compass.
Yeah.
In my school,
we did actually have a chemistry lesson where the teacher made mustard gas. Honestly, our school was closed for 2 days, and he was an MP subsequently. I won't tell you his name. He was a Liberal Democrat MP.
Probably find that out.
And yeah, he made mustard gas. Our school got him. I think we've still got the video from BBC Look North, just to bring it back to BBC.
Sounds like great PR.
Yeah, we loved it. It was brilliant. Got 2 days off.
Did you see the guidelines as well for checking if your child or teenager is a hacker? And it was...
Have lots of bitcoins?
I really want to get this right. It was, are they locking themselves in their room and playing on their computer too much? Mm. Are they on their phone
They're
too much?
Hacking.
Are they
something that sounds like hacking?
Are they surly and uncommunicative? And I was like, that's every teenager ever.
Yeah. Did they look edgy when you mentioned TalkBot?
Wow. So yeah, but it's a bit of a tangent, but that is an interesting thing about media as well, actually, because all of our national newspapers are almost uniquely British thing. Most countries have big city newspapers, but regardless, they're all run by people who've worked their way up through a print industry. And it's the same with TV companies as well. And they're massively challenged by the fact that, you know, that story is written, as ridiculous as it is, it's written for people of a certain demographic who don't understand. And they're older people, because young people don't read newspapers. They don't buy newspapers and read them. And, you know, again, they all the national newspapers are going to, I mean, not remotely will all of them survive, because they're not adapting to...
Well, one's already gone, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We just lost one, didn't we?
And The Guardian this week announced, was it 200?
It was 100 journalists.
100 journalists.
And everyone else is going to take a huge pay cut.
Yeah. And that on the week when they were hosting their Future of Media Summit, which I thought was mildly ironic. So, yeah, there is this whole thing, which, again, is why, as much as it's a PR effort by the BBC, it is a really cool thing to do, because it's allowing children to explore and learn without dictating to them the technology that they're going to be using. Because by the time they enter the workforce, everything will look different all over again.
There's something interesting to be said about diversity, I think. Because, and this is maybe not the best position to be talking about it with five white men sitting around a microphone, but the fact that both the tech industry and the media industry, the two industries I know, have huge problems with diversity.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've just said you didn't use a computer until you were at university. My first experience with a computer was a BBC Micro, which my dad brought home because he was a teacher. This is the sort of thing that would allow...
Yeah.
people that wouldn't otherwise have the opportunities to learn about technology and get into these industries.
Very true.
And I think that's only to be applauded.
Agreed.
Excellent. Well, rather than have a round of applause, we'll just have a quick round of the room. BBC Microbits. Futuristic Gift of Truth or Get With a Programme, Daddy-O?
Gift of Truth.
Scott Carey.
Yeah, Gift of Truth.
Henry.
It's a round three.
Sorry you had to go last every time, but that's unfortunate.
That's all right.
Puts the pressure on you to think of something funny, don't you?
Yeah. Not a diverse room and not a diverse set of answers to any of the questions.
Note to self, more diversity required. Well, thanks for listening, listener. You're great. Do get in touch with us to let us know your thoughts and opinions and to shake us down for cash. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idguk. And do not forget to follow, like and download this podcast wherever you find it. We'll be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech, courtesy of our good friends Audio Technica. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Don't hack.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.